this is Dan McCafferty. I'm with the band Nazareth, and they want me to do an interview for Mark After Dark. But I'm sort of travelling at the moment, so if I can maybe try and call back later, and we'll arrange a time, and I'll leave a number for you. Nice talking to your machine. Bye.
Mad Mark After Dark, the man that hates everything except the real thing, coming to you once again, live on the air. Tonight on the program is my continuing interview with Mr. Dan McCafferty, lead singer of Nazareth. Okay, well, the song Kentucky Fried Blues off the album pertained to the bad eating habits of the road crew. Was was this a way of giving them a song, your way of paying tribute to their hard work?
I was kind of like that, you know, because they were all so... I mean, these guys, you know, we were doing like back-to-back shows and, you know, I mean, at the time we were doing stadium, so you're throwing up a lot of stuff and taking it all down again and going to the next place and, you know, I just wanted them to know that we appreciated what they did, you know. And it was like, you know, they eventually got, they put it into, I think the Ryder contract, you know, like Kentucky Fried, you put Kentucky Fried Chicken in McDonald's does not constitute food.
No, it really doesn't.
So the guys, I mean, that was just out of respect for the boys, really.
That is...
And it's meant to be humorous, too, of course.
Well, in 80 and 81, Jeff Skunk Baxter, mm-hmm. from the Doobie Brothers and many other things, produced two albums, Malice in Wonderland and Full Circle. Yeah. How was he selected to produce those albums?
He'd heard their stuff, and we'd met Jeff a couple of times, and... it was him. He went to E&M and said, look, he says, have you guys still got Nazareth? And, yeah. He says, I would like to talk to them. So, fair enough, came across and had a chat with us and listened to the stuff and says, oh yeah, I'd love to do that, it'd be great. Because again, he was getting in production. You know, I mean, Jeff had always had a gig as a guitar player anyway. I mean, he could always get work.
Yeah.
But I think he wanted to expand his, you know, and he had great ideas. I mean, you know, and he'd been in so many recording sessions. You got to remember, that was back in the disco days where I think Jeff was on, like, you know, 19 out of the top 20 records that were in the charts. You know, playing strum or something, you know. So it was fun to work with, and he was very, very professional in the studio, very, you know, on it, you know. And it was fun. He was a good guy and a talented bloke, obviously. You know, so that was, again, another thing in our growth, I think. I think that helped his... like getting some American attitude into it and getting some, I don't know, different approaches that he had, you know. So yeah, I was proud of those albums. I thought they were good. They turned out well.
On the 1981 Full Circle album, the band does a live version of the J.J. Cale song Cocaine. Why did the band decide to do a live version of this song instead of recording a studio version of it?
Just at the time when Flint was going through a really hard time, you know, with the tires and the auto industry and whatever. And it was a town we'd always played in. We'd always loved the attitude of the people. Mm-hmm. And they were really down, you know, and we thought, well, we'll give them a little, you know, this is for Flint kind of thing, you know what I mean? So we liked the version we did with the congas and stuff like that, as opposed to doing a straight copy of it, you know what I mean? And it's just a fun song, you know?
Okay. Well, also from the same year, Nazareth contributed a song, Crazy, a suitable case for treatment to the film Heavy Metal. What was it like adding this song to the soundtrack to the film?
It was incredibly, it was done so, well, the people who were making the movie didn't want anybody to know what the movie was about. They just wanted music that would fit with how they thought, you know. So they got in touch with our management at the time and we did Crazy and they said, oh yeah, that's just what we're looking for, great. Mm-hmm. So it was all kind of at arm's length. It was really weird. And when I saw it, I thought, God almighty, now did we know that's what the scene was going to be in our head mentally, or did they build the scene around the song? I have no idea what happened there. But I loved the effect of it. And it was great to be involved in something like that, because it was a kind of one-off thing that you probably won't see again for a while.
Oh, no, I doubt it. Well, in late 81, Nazareth released the live album Snaz, or It's Snaz. Depending on who, how you open it up. The band does a cover of the ZZ Top classic Tush. Why did the band decide to do a live version of that song?
Again, respect to Billy. We're all big fans of Billy, of ZZ Top. We all love Billy's playing.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a case of, like, you know, And it was an encore, and it was a fun song to do. And I mean, the entire world knew it, so it was a case of, it was just like shouting yippee at the end of the set. You know? It was fun to do, and it's a classic rock song. It's almost Chuck Berry, you know?
Yeah, it is. I love it. In 82, the band released the 2XS album. The Canadian band Helix did a cover of the song Dream on their 87 Wild in the Streets album.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, was the first time a band did a cover of a Nazareth song.
Yeah.
Were you flattered that a band finally did a cover of one of your songs?
Yeah.
And what did you think of their cover?
Well, I thought they did a good job of it. It was great. And, you know, it's always flattering when someone thinks your song's good enough to cover. Of course it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice. It was flattering for them to do it. And the thing is, that it had been a huge hit for us in Europe, but never got a play in America. Never. But it was number one in Germany and
It was a big song.
It was a big song. But and hey, the guys made a good job of it. And when we play with them, we don't do it; they do it. No, because it's their song in Canada, you know, so, you know.
Oh.
we're not going to steal their thunder. That would be poor.
No.
That would be very bad behavior.
You do have a lot of your own. On the 1981's Full Circle album, the addition of John Locke was added on keyboards. And Billy Rankin joined the band for the 2XS album. Before the 1983 Sound Elixir album, John Locke left. And after that album, Rankin left the group also. The band was back to the original four-piece. Was the band attempting to recapture the chemistry of the classic four-member lineup on the 1984 album, The Catch, or Cinema in 1986, and the Snakes and Ladders album in 89?
No, I think what happened there was, Nazareth's always been like a happy band. We've always got along with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not happy there, go away. You know what I mean? If you don't want to be on the road, leave. You know, nobody's going to hold it against you. If you're not happy touring, if you're not happy with how your life is going, then that's up to you. You've got your own life, you know. So that's kind of what happened. You know, John got fed up touring, and so did Billy. So it was the case. And Billy got an offer to go solo and stuff like that. So, you know, good luck to you, kid. I mean, you know, you've got to make your own decisions in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a case of, do we want to get someone to try and replace John? No, really. And do we want someone to get replace Billy? No, really. Because they had their own styles, and I thought they fitted into the band very well at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then we were back, as you say, back to basics. And that was okay, too. I could live with that, you know.
Okay. Well, on the 89 Snakes and Ladders album, this was the last album featuring Manny on guitar. Mm. What was the reason for his departure?
Oh, there was loads of big fallouts. I mean, it was starting to, we were really starting to get on each other's nerves a little bit. And he wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd split up from his first wife, and he was involved in getting married and everything again. I mean, no, that's not anything in music. But, I mean, he was just not a happy bunny. So we said, right, see ya. You know, and there's no point of being here, because it just upsets everybody else's war. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like, so if you're not happy, go and do something that makes you happy, man. I mean, no hatred in it or nothing like that. Just go and do your thing. You know, we'll survive. You know what I mean?
Okay. So, on the 91 No Jive album, Billy Rankin returned to replace Manny
mm-hmm.
and stayed until 94's Move Me album.
Mm.
How vital was his role as a member in the band the second time around as compared to his first? I know he co-wrote a lot of songs with
him. Oh, he did. Billy, again, one of these prolific writers. I mean, he writes for fun, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I mean, it was always positive. Anybody we've ever had in that's lasted to actually get to record the album has to be positive. We're not in there trying to soothe someone's ego or, you know, it's a band. It's supposed to be, everybody's got to be happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, I mean, we liked the stuff at the time. And again, you know, we enjoyed doing it at the time. See, you always love your albums when you're doing them. It's easy in 10 years' time to look back and think, either that was really great or, oh, we shouldn't have done that. You know what I mean? So, but, you know, that's just life itself. You know, you make choices.
Yeah, of course.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, it was a very important part of the band at that time.
Okay, well, in 1993, Guns N' Roses did a cover version of Hair of the Dog on their Spaghetti Incident album. What was your impression of them doing a cover of that really big song?
I thought they had balls of charge of church bells, and that was good on them. And I thought they made a good version of it as well. And we've seen the boy, I mean, we knew the boys before that anyway. We'd met them a few times when we played in California and stuff, and they were just starting out. And I'm a big fan of Axl. In fact, I saw him a bit last year. I went to see him in Prague.
Yeah.
And he was great, you know what I mean?
I have a few friends.
He's a lovely guy. He's very, people think he's some kind of weird, I think he's a bit weird, right enough. But he's a very humble man. I mean, when anytime I speak to him, he's always a nice kid to me. So.
I have a few of my friends playing in his band.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were all nice lads as well. They were a great bunch of boys.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
And they
put on a great show, and 20,000 people loved it, so, you know, what can I tell you?
I mean, well, Axl always said you were his favorite singer.
Mm.
Why didn't Nazareth play at his wedding?
Well, what happened was he was marrying an Everly Brothers daughter, and he asked us, we were in Canada, and they came to see us, and he said, I'm getting married, he says, would you play at the wedding? I said, I'd love to, man, that'd be brilliant. I mean, especially when you're getting married to an Everly Brother, you know. an Everly Brothers girl, sorry. But then what happened was we were in the middle of a European tour, and they were getting married, and I think the song lasted longer than the wedding, actually, you know, to be quite honest. But I would have done it, for sure, but we just didn't have time, scheduling there.
Okay, well, on the 98 album Boogaloo, Jimmy Morrison was added on guitar, replacing Billy Rankin, and remains to this day.
Yes.
Did you imagine that Morrison would remain in the band as long as he has?
Yes, actually, I did. Because
we saw him
playing in a band with Lee
when
they were at Rock College together, and we knew, right, I mean, this kid's got it going on, you know what I mean? And he does, and he still does. And again, he's a prolific writer. He's dead easy to get along with. Jimmy, he's the quietest man on earth until he's on stage. He's just no bother.
That album's great too. Boogaloo.
I think so too. That's a very good album.
It was one of my favorites for that period of time.
Yeah.
Oh well. On April 30th, 1999, drummer Daryl Sweet died of a heart attack at the age of 51 years old.
Mm-hmm.
How did you cope with the loss of a friend and a bandmate at that time?
With great difficulty, actually. We kind of, it's going to sound weird, but his father died very young of heart problems, and so did his uncle, so it was a genetic thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, and Daryl, I think, knew, and Daryl should have been called Daryl Party Sweet, because he knew, I think, that he wasn't going to be an old man.
Wow.
You know, and he gave it his best shot, let me tell you, to have a good time most days. And of course it was terrible, it was awful, we didn't know what to do.
I know.
But then we thought about what Daryl was like, and Daryl would have got somebody else. We did exactly what he'd have done, you know, if it had happened to one of us, you know, he'd have got another guy in, you know.
Yeah, well, you got Lee.
We got Lee, and that wasn't even a problem. We didn't want auditions, and that sounded cheap. I don't know. It just felt weird to me. I didn't want to know about it. But Lee had known Daryl all his life, and he loved all the songs. He was a drummer. He'd been Daryl's drum tech on a few occasions when he was working with a band. So it just was a natural choice, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like he didn't know the tunes. I mean, his dad made them.
Yeah, well.
So that was it. I mean, and that's, what, 14 years ago or something?
Yeah, he's been in the band for a long time.
Aye. So.
I mean.
And him and Jimmy are just so positive, and they write all the time, and they remind us of stuff we used to do. He said, you should do that one again, man. That's a great tune. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, songs that you've maybe forgotten about, like, you know, And he's like, no, you know, so they're good for Pete and I as well. You know, they give us a kick up the ass every now and again, which is really good. You know? My name is Dan McGaffery. I'm the singer with Nazareth. And you're listening to the Mark After Dark show. And you know that makes sense.